Thanks, Kendrick. It's great to be back. So I'm going to be talking about the subject of CMB lensing, but with the idea of looking at it in terms of getting leverage across extremely wide redshift ranges. So what I mean by this is, let's say that we're primarily interested in constraining things like the dark energy equation of state or neutrino mass. These are things that become important late in the universe. So if you're looking at something like the CMB, which is a snapshot, which is primarily a snapshot of things that happen at very high redshift, and you have some way of extracting information out of it that also has low redshift information, you're able to compare things between low and high redshift information and get a lot of information about things like dark energy and neutrino mass. The reason this is interesting to me right now is because there are mild discrepancies between what we see at low redshifts, that's late times, and at high redshifts in the CMB. And in particular, combining the technique of CMB lensing with optical and other probes at low redshift gives you an amazing amount of sensitivity to the sum of neutrino masses, something that will allow us to achieve a detection probably even before particle physics experiments are able to, of the scale of the sum of neutrino masses at 3 sigma with future CMB experiments called the CMB stage 4, which I'll talk about a bit, and also allow us to reach 1-2% level dark energy equation of state precision using this CMB alone sometimes and using completely different methods, which allows you to have different cross-check. So that's broadly what I want to speak about. And our main actor here, which you're all probably very familiar with, is the CMB, which is our high redshift anchor. So what I mean by that is when you look at the CMB, you're mostly seeing photons that are recombination era photons, and that gives you a snapshot of the universe that maps matter fluctuations at a very high redshift of 1,100. So we've all seen pictures of the power spectrum, the statistics of the CMB. It's a very well understood thing. What's important to realize is that most of the information in this field, in the CMB, comes from that high redshift era when dark energy was negligible, because the dark energy, the energy density is constant, but since you're going to very high redshifts, most of the stuff is dominated by matter. And neutrinos are still extremely very relativistic. The power spectrum that we measure is, I guess the clicker doesn't work that well. So the laser pointer doesn't work. It's going to be proportional to the amplitude of scale of fluctuations primarily, but it also has a factor. This becomes important a little bit later when we're looking at constraints on neutrino mass. That's proportional to the exponential of the optical depth, which is the probability that you'll scatter with things that are in the reionization era late in the universe. So this is suppression of the power spectrum. It comes to this factor of tau. So any measurement of the CMB power spectrum is degenerate between the actual amplitude of the power spectrum, the primordial power spectrum, and the tau that you have in there. So after some time, the universe evolves, and you have matter fluctuations that evolve under gravity. And at a redshift around 300, neutrinos start to become non-relativistic. Their mass starts to matter because they've diluted enough, and the universe has expanded and cooled enough. And a dark energy component starts to dominate around a redshift of 1 or 2. Both of these components start affecting the growth of structure, how much this matter starts collapsing. So we saw how the CMB primary fluctuations give you a snapshot at high redshift. But the very same photons that started at very high redshift interact with the structure that grew late in the universe. And one of the primary interactions that I'm interested in is just the gravitational lensing effect. And these photons undergo deflections. And what we measure is ultimately the lensed field of the CMB. So there's a lensing convergence field. It's a magnification field hidden inside the CMB that you measure. that's sensitive to the total projected mass density, the integrated line of sight mass density. In particular, because of the way the kernel of this, the contributions of this of the CMB works, it's primarily picking up contributions around a redshift of between 0.5 and 2. And so it's very sensitive to the linear matter power spectrum. So it's actually very easy to model what the power spectrum of this lensing field is over a large range of scales. So I'm primarily going to be talking about measurements that we make in this field, not a lot about theory, but just a little bit of background. The way we extract this lensing signal from the CMB maps, so you can think of lensing as, in real space, it's easy to think of it as just as a remapping that conserves surface brightness. But it's even more useful to think of it in Fourier space if you want to eventually reconstruct the modes of this this lensing field. So imagine that the X here is just the temperature. It could also be the polarization of the CMB, which I won't talk about much. But for ease, let's just think about the temperature. What this remapping in real space corresponds to a mode coupling in Fourier space, where a previously uncorrelated mode at L1 of the CMB becomes correlated with a different mode, and this correlation is actually proportional to the gravitational potential that causes this lensing. And the precise configuration is described by just a triangle, the triangle sum, where a scale, a Fourier mode of capital L in the phi potential gets contributions from triangles that have L1 and L2 in the CMB. What this means is that it becomes possible to reconstruct the lensing potential itself just by looking at the statistics, just by looking at the Fourier modes inside your lens CMB field. So you can construct what's called a quadratic estimator, which when weighted in a certain way, will give you an unbiased estimate of what this underlying potential is. So by just taking the lens CMB map, you can reconstruct and make a map of the lensing convergence field. Now, a number of experiments have done this, and this is kind of the state of the art at the moment. There are a few measurements here that are missing that I'll show in a bit. But what this is showing is that you've reconstructed this phi potential, and then you look at the statistics of this reconstructed field. So that gives you the power spectrum of the lensing reconstruction, which, because it's proportional to the four-point function of the temperature, because each phi is a quadratic function of temperature. So the Planck experiment, which is a satellite that looked at the microwave background from space, has mapped most of the sky and done an incredible job in giving us a 2.5% measurement of the amplitude of this lensing power spectrum. There's some sensitivity to the dark energy equation of state in this because it's picking up contributions from late time. But more importantly, it's one of the best probes of the sum of neutrino masses that we have. I want to talk about that a little bit. So what massive neutrinos do late in the universe is it suppresses the power. So this is on top, the top two panels show you the matter power spectrum for different neutrino masses. So relative to the case where you have massless neutrinos, the power spectrum at small scales undergoes a suppression. And this essentially happens because neutrinos free stream outside of gravitational wells, and this suppresses the perturbations and growth and the growth rate at inside potential wells. Because your CMB lensing potential is measuring a projected line of sight power spectrum, you can see that the same effect happens to the overall power spectrum that I showed you. This measurement translates into a constraint on neutrino mass based on the amplitude that you measure here. So this is particularly interesting because, as many of you are well aware, we have measurements of the difference of the difference of the square of neutrino masses for the three different neutrinos. It comes from either atmospheric measurements or solar neutrino measurements. There's ambiguity as to what the actual ordering is, and there's also ambiguity as to what the overall scale of this neutrino of these neutrino masses is. But what the CMB lensing measurement gives you is the total sum of these neutrino masses. So what you're able to do is First of all, you can distinguish between whether it's an inverted hierarchy or a normal hierarchy, because these constraints tell you that there should be the minimal mass, total sum of the masses in the inverted hierarchy case is around 100 MeV. And what's really interesting is that state-of-the-art measurements right now are really probing into this. So it's important to realize here that so I mentioned how you can reconstruct the phi potential and get this four-point lensing information. But the CMB power spectrum itself is the peaks here. If you just look at the two-point statistics, lensing can cause smearing of these peaks. And so you can also measure, get information on the sum of neutrino masses by looking at how much these peaks are smeared. So even if you don't include any lensing data sets, you get an incredible amount of constraint on the sum of neutrino masses. You also need a baryon acoustic oscillation data set to break some degeneracies. So this is almost, you know, there's a question of whether you can believe the measurements from the CMB two-point spectrum, because as you can see, there's a slight discrepancy between the when you include the Planck four-point lensing measurement and when you don't include it, when you just have the two-point power spectrum measurement. But the point I want to make here is that we're really getting to the point that we are starting to be sensitive to the mass scale of neutrinos.
So you mean the mass scale four-point data favors
higher neutrino mass? Yeah. So this.
But it's very low scale.
2-ish sigma, yeah. And so that's that point is kind of highlighted here. This is a plot from the Planck paper, where you look at. So again, this is the theory curve. There is the 4-point lensing measurement, which is CL phi phi, the power spectrum of the reconstructed lensing field. The black curve there is what's predicted by measurements of from just the CMB, from just the primary CMB that doesn't include the lensing reconstruction. And then you plot on top of that what you actually measure. These are the residuals here. You find that there's actually a little bit of a deficit. I should also point out that there is uncertainty in that black curve. So just looking at this is not very informative. But this is, again, the Planck measurement. And they have more points at higher multipoles, but they fail a null test there. So I'm not showing all of that data. So again, this is just to point out that because of these descriptions, this measurement is very interesting, and it's yet to be seen if this is actually a sign of new physics, or even if you're sensitive to neutrino mass.
Yeah. Does it actually favor if you do include the 4-point data? Does it actually favor non-zero?
No. So you can. I mean, so if you that's blue curve is just what. Yeah. All right. So the experiment that I'm primarily involved with is unlike Planck, it's a ground-based experiment. The advantage that we have is that because we're on the ground, we can make very large telescopes and. Unlike, so Planck is a 7 arc minute resolution experiment, and we're a 1.4 arc minute resolution experiment. This means you're able to probe to very small scales in the CMB. And that's actually kind of important because, again, going back here, if you wanted to reconstruct the large scale modes, you have a lot of those tiny Ls, then you have a lot of contributions from small scale CMB modes. So the better the resolution of your CMB experiment, the better you can reconstruct lensing across all scales. So there's a whole lot of people who are involved with the lensing analysis. And we've been looking at data that we've collected. I haven't put the dates here, but from 2013 to 2015, this telescope had an upgraded detector, which also measures the polarization of the CMB. And the polarization of the CMB is also lensed, and you get also additional information, and it's less systematic. I won't talk too much about that. And right now, it's been upgraded with an even more sensitive detector. It's called Advanced ACT, and it's ongoing right now. And the result I'm going to talk about right now comes from analyzing the data from season 1 and season 2, of the actual experiment. Season 3 data is still there. So this is based on just 12% of the data that's in the can right now. This is a preliminary report on our reconstruction of the lensing potential, and I'll show a comparison with Planck. So what's important to realize here is that the Planck measurement that I showed was just from in these scales. They do have measurements above LF400, but there's a failure of the null test. So experiments like ACT and SPT and other ground-based experiments are able to go further in reconstructing the lensing potential at smaller scales. And so these scales are now available for cosmology analysis. So if there's a suppression of the power spectrum due to neutrino mass, we are able to see it at more scales. So I want to stress that this is not an easy measurement. There's a lot of it's a very challenging measurement because it's a 4-point measurement of the temperature field. So you're very sensitive to the noise properties of the experiment, and I'm not going to talk in detail about the calculation of these noise-dependent biases and higher-order corrections that you have to be really careful about subtracting. So this is the context of measurement. So there's many experiments, like I mentioned, that are looking at this CMB power spectrum. They're all roughly consistent. Our measurement is, I didn't put the numbers here, but it's 7 sigma at 1.05 amplitude with respect to Planck. So these orange points here are the Planck points that are used in their cosmology analysis, and the purple are our measurements, along with measurements from other ground-based experiments like SPT, BICEP, and Polar Bear.
And the black curve is
the Planck. So this is very, okay, I'm not 100% sure, but it's probably the same curve here, which is the best fit Planck measurement from the CMB, which is, yeah. So it's the best fit measure. If you look at the CMB primary data and look at the best fit lambda CDM model, then this is the prediction that you get for CL kappa kappa. So I won't talk more about neutrino mass constraints that are coming from this. We can wait for the upcoming paper. But I want to talk a little bit about how well we can do this, where can we get, and what kind of experiments do we have in line. So the big thing that a lot of people are excited about is, this is a...
Can I ask a quick question for you? So what would the theory curve look like that we're looking for? Like there would be a actual dip at a certain scale?
Yeah, so... This would be the relative dip based on different neutrino masses. So it's mostly an overall amplitude that we're looking for, and that's important because I'll get to why it's just mostly an amplitude. So to make improvements over this, there's a kind of a big planned experiment, which is called a CMB stage four experiment. And the important thing here is that we are looking at, because the detectors that we use are already photon short noise limited, you can't make any improvements to the actual detectors to measure the CMB. All you can do is like add more detectors into the focal plane and then beat down the noise. So improving CMB experiments is basically talking about, you know, building bigger, larger number of telescopes with more density of detectors. And there's almost like a Moore's law improvement in the number of detectors, which leads to the increase in the actual sensitivity. While the experiment that I just talked about in Planck is like a stage two experiment around here, and ongoing experiments like advanced actor stage three, CMB stage four is planned for 2020, where most of the experiments that are involved on the ground come together to build a gigantic experiment. Now, one of the main things that CMB stage four is going after are B modes from primordial gravitational waves. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that. So that's what most of these targets are for, this error on R. But there's a lot of auxiliary science, like the number of light relativistic species and the sum of neutrino masses and the dark energy equation of state that you can do with this. And then I want to just like focus a little bit on the neutrino mass constraint. Yeah. Plus, yes. Okay, so that's what's going to be. I don't know why. I'm pretty sure it's a prior under reionization optical depth, which I'm going to talk about a bit. So tau e. I'm not sure what tau e means. It might be is it tau c? If it's tau c, then it means cosmic variance limited tau. Probably that's what I would imagine. Right. That's what I want to just point out a little bit. So even though we're going to expect orders of magnitude improvement in lensing reconstruction, there's this problem of a degeneracy. Now, the power spectrum that I mentioned earlier, the CMB power spectrum, gives you a the amplitude is proportional to the primordial amplitude of primordial scalar fluctuations, and also this optical depth. And the CMB, because it's measuring the amplitude of fluctuations low at late times, it's also proportional to the amplitude of scalar fluctuations, and also kind of like loosely inversely proportional to the neutrino mass. So because there's this degeneracy between the two, you need to combine this CMB lensing measurement with the measurement of the CMB of the primary CMB in order to break this degeneracy of AS. But because AS is degenerate with tau, any assumption that any inference you make about neutrino mass is going to be degenerate with is going to be limited by what you know about tau. So that's what the tau prior thing comes in here. And this is forecast that we made for CMB stage 4, showing precisely what this is. You can see that as a function of, so this is a planned experiment. We haven't like decided what we want to build yet. So we're looking at matrices that involve the resolution in the experiment on y-axis and the noise, the sensitivity that you have on the x-axis. And you find that once you add something that breaks the degeneracy on the total amount of matter in the universe, like BAO, you don't really see a lot of dependence. The one sigma constraint on neutrino mass you can get is around 20. And part of this reason is the tau prior. Because in order to measure the optical depth, you have to, really where this information comes from at the moment is from low L polarization measurements from WMAP or Planck. And WMAP and Planck are satellite experiments, which are able to go to very large scales. And the effect of reionization is primarily seen at very large scales in the polarization spectrum. It's difficult to go to large scales from the ground, because you're not there's like ground pickup and all kinds of weird stuff. It hasn't been demonstrated that you can go to a multipole of less than 30 from the ground. We're working really hard to do that. So if you can't go to an L of L less than 30 from the ground, then you're going to be limited by the measurement that Planck made for tau. This blue value here is the blue book value for Planck, which is really the measurement that they hoped to achieve when they started out building the Planck experiment. That's not where we are. The latest measurement from Planck, where they've controlled for a lot of large, and even from space, it's a very difficult measurement. It's about twice that value. So you have to be careful when making forecasts about how well you can constrain neutrino mass. You have to remember that we haven't done better on tau than 0.012. The blue book value is 0.006. And the white line here shows you what is the best sensitivity you can get on tau if you made a super fantastic space experiment and measured all of the polarization at large out. Because of cosmic variance, because of the fact that you're only measuring one realization of the universe, you can't get a measurement better than that. And you can see that that means you're basically limited to a 15 MeV measurement at these noise and resolution levels. So that's something important to keep in mind. And I don't think I have a slide on this, but people are thinking really hard about ways to improve on Planck's measurement of measuring tau, because it's fundamentally limiting us in improving our understanding of neutrino mass. And some of those include, of course, like more space-based experiments, like PIXI, for example, is a proposed experiment. It's nice that if you want to measure V-modes from primordial gravitational waves, you need to have some of the same requirements. You want to go to really large scales. So maybe you know, it's something that we'll get for free from future experiments. And there's even people who are trying to measure it from the ground. A class is an experiment that's trying to really control the systematics on large scales from the ground. So hopefully we'll improve beyond the Planck level, but it's important to keep in mind that that's a limit. So that's something we learned from running these forecasts. Okay, so that's the large scale structural lensing. So I want to switch gears a little bit to looking at, so the CL5-5 reconstruction that I talked about, we're primarily looking at what the large scale fluctuations of the matter field are. But if you have a high resolution experiment like ACT or SPT with a very good beam, then you can look at the lensing signal from deep inside halos. And halos are locations of the universe where the gravitational collapse is undergone and it's getting filled with galaxies and galaxy clusters that are forming there. So my thesis was on trying to measure the signal for the first time. And I'll just briefly talk about that a bit. It's qualitatively slightly different from the large-scale structure measurement. So again, going back to those triangles up there, if you want to look at the small scale lensing, which is big L's, then your triangle configurations now include a large scale CMB mode and a small scale CMB mode. And so it's easy to see this in real space. So I just want to show you what happens is that if you zoom into the CMB at the scale of a cluster, let's say this is like 10 arc minutes across, then because of that CMB power spectrum dropping extremely fast, because the power spectrum drops extremely fast, you don't have a lot of power, so there's not a lot of fluctuations at small scales. So the CMB mostly looks like a gradient. It just, it has some direction. Now, if I plop a supermassive cluster over there at a redshift of 1, you see a little bit of a dimple that's formed there. So that's if you just had the unlensed CMB, and if you just, obviously when you look in the direction of a cluster, you can see other things. But if you just had the lensing signal, then it's this nice dimple. But if you take a difference, then you can see that the geometric effect that's happening here is that points from the cold part of the gradient are being lensed to the hot part of the gradient and vice versa. So you get this dipole structure at the location of a spherically symmetric cluster, which is aligned with the background gradient. So quadratic estimators come to the rescue here again. It's the same kind of technique, where you take a combination of temperature maps, but it's easier to see in real space what's happening here. One combination of your CMB map, you look at the gradient of the CMB. So you take your map and then you just find what the gradient of it is, and you low pass filter it. So that's the LCMB large part of the triangle there. You're looking at the large scale CMB mode. And then you're kind of correlating it with the small scale fluctuation, the LCMB small, by doing a high pass filter. So you're trying to isolate this dipole. And when you do this and stack on many clusters, what you're essentially doing is picking out the dipole that is aligned with the background gradient. So only lensing does this. Only lensing produces a small scale fluctuation, which is aligned with the, always aligned coherently with the background gradient. So you can do this quadratic estimator and you can stack, and that's what we did with the ACTPOL data from season 1. So the results that I just showed you are from season 2, but this is like one of the first results that we had from the ACT, the polarization data, although we only use the temperature maps here, is to stack on the locations of known galaxy groups and extract the signal, which you can take a profile of, and it actually has the profile of an NFW, which is the profile you expect of a galaxy group or a cluster. And SPT is another high resolution experiment that also did this for massive galaxy clusters, and they found a 3-sigma signal. Planck, even with its large beam, is able to detect and stack on very large massive clusters. And because they have a whole lot of sky, you're able to get a 5-sigma detection. So why is this important? I'm not sure I have a slide on why it's important, but yeah, Why are we interested in looking at the lensing signal from halos? So one of the methods of looking at this growth of structure, finding the amplitude of the fluctuations at late times, is to just count the number of massive objects that have these galaxies inside them, these halos, and then find how heavy they are, and then map that to the amplitude of power matter fluctuations. And because of that amplitude of matter fluctuation, things depend on things like neutrino mass and the dark energy equation of state. Measuring that is really important. But it's hard to measure the masses of clusters, because most of the matter, if you just look at it with an optical telescope, most of it is just, most of the actual matter that's causing the gravitational field there is dark matter. You wouldn't see it in the galaxies. So you need to have some kind of way that's sensitive to the total mass, and that's what lensing does. And kind of the conventional way that people do this is to look at the lensing of other galaxies that are behind these clusters. And that's a very powerful technique. But it's limited by the fact that if you want to look at clusters that are at high redshifts, say a redshift of 1 or 2, where dark energy is just starting to kick in, then galaxy clusters at those redshifts don't have a lot of galaxy behind them. So you don't have any constraining power from weak gravitational lensing, from using galaxy lensing. But the CMB is a backlight it's a backlight for every galaxy cluster and every redshift. So it's a potentially much better way of constraining the masses. So that's kind of what this is pointing at, which is this is a part from the Planck clusters paper, which is trying to look at what the amplitude of matter fluctuations is predicted by the CMB. So that's the black curve. And then using the number of galaxy clusters calibrated with different techniques, these two are galaxy weak lensing measurements. This is a CMB lensing measurement to calibrate the masses, and looking at how much they agree. So what they find is that there's mild tensions again. So again, this is that high Z, low Z difference. What's predicted by the CMB at high redshift is slightly in tension with the measurements you actually make of lensing at low redshift. Yeah.
So that CMB curve, is that from mostly from the SC or mostly from the primary CMB? If it was mostly from SC, then I don't see how that
it's mostly from the primary CMB. Yeah.
If you ever hope to do that mostly with SC, so that it would be a high redshift or low redshift thing that you're measuring both in the case of the black curve and the blue curve.
If you measure, so SC helps you find the clusters, but you still need to calibrate the masses. So most of your sensitivity to sigma 8 comes from how well you can constrain. So it's limited by how well you can calibrate the cluster mass. So if you just find clusters and then use the SC decrements, then you're not going to be able to get a lot of constraining power. So you really need some mass calibration technique to get mass calibration. Yeah.
Of a sigma estimate variation.
Sorry?
I don't know if sigma is previous. You ask that?
1.5 to 2.
Two.
Yeah, maximum 2. It's these are not, I don't want to make a big deal out of small fluctuations, but. Yes, right, exactly. So this is an ongoing program where people are trying to find clusters, and then next slide is that, you know, all of these measurements are made on order of a few tens of clusters. But the CMB stage 4 experiment that I talked about, and I didn't really talk a lot about finding clusters. I showed you this picture of the CMB being lensed by a cluster. But if you actually look at the location of a cluster, there's a whooping signal that comes from something that's not lensing. And that's just the Compton upscattering of CMB photons by hot ionized gas in these clusters. And that's a frequency-dependent effect, which means that if you look at a certain frequency, you can see a hole where the cluster is. And that lets you, and in order to reconstruct lensing, you have to remove that signal by looking at the frequency dependence. That's a different issue. But my point is that by using just the CMB, you can find clusters internally by looking at where these SC blobs are. And CMB S4 is going to map so much of the sky at such a good sensitivity that you're going to find order of 10,000, maybe 100,000 clusters. And people are kind of excited about using the CMB lensing technique to go to the locations of these clusters, stack on the lensing reconstruction on these clusters, and get the mass scale of those clusters. So instead of looking at things that you have like order tens or hundreds of clusters, you're looking at doing these measurements on. So that's your point exactly. This is the early stages. So you're going to be able to like really pin down the precision on these things with an experiment like this. So these two plots that I'm showing here, this is a recent paper by Thibault Louis and David Alonso, who look at what you can gain on. So this is tiny here, but this is the sum of neutrino masses. Because again, with clusters and cluster mass calibration, you're really again measuring the overall amplitude of matter fluctuations at low redshift. You are sensitive to neutrino mass, which affects the growth rate. So if you combined this measurement of the neutrino masses from just lensing from Planck lensing or the Planck CMB and S4 lensing, but you added to that clusters, then you actually go from, let's say, a 3 sigma detection neutrino mass to 5 sigma detection neutrino mass. Although I should bring out the caveat here that they are assuming a cosmic variance limited tau, so that's a big caveat. But the point is that there's ways to add to the neutrino mass measurement that comes not just from large scale structure CMB lensing, but also from cluster lensing measurements. And some of the work that I've been doing in the CMB stage 4 lensing group is to look at what kind of resolution requirement we want, because there's the actual resolution, the size of the dishes that we'll use for CMB stage 4 experiment is still up in the air. There's a big difference in cost between 1 arc minute and 3 arc minute. So I've been looking into how different the mass sensitivity, the percentage mass sensitivity, how well your error on mass of 1,000 clusters over the actual mass, what is the percentage of that as a function of the beam size you use, and there's factors of 3 difference there, and it's even worse if you have miscentering, if you don't know the actual centers of the clusters, which is a beam-dependent effect. We're still working on translating this into actual parameter constraints, because your difference in mass sensitivity it doesn't necessarily directly translate to how well you can constrain cosmological parameters, especially if something like if you have a tau degeneracy, a tau limit. Yeah.
The 50 MeV, that's about the mass small hierarchy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of minimum mass.
That's right.
Get a 5 sigma detection time. This technique you need variance limited on tau.
Yeah. So you get 3 sigma without clusters. But and if you add clusters and you have a cosmic variance, so this is a little bit of a it's not the most appropriate plot to show, because we should highlight that it's really hard to get to CVL tau. So if you had CVL tau, then you'd get to 5 sigma.
And are there other techniques that are going to be able to measure the neutrino mass of higher significance, or are we ultimately always going to 5 sigma?
And so there are many other methods, including galaxy lensing, which have different systematics, different astrophysics that you need to worry about. But all of those are still kind of degenerate with the overall scale of matter fluctuations. So you need another anchor, which is a CMB, which is limited by tau. So I think the answer to your question is, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong. No, I'm not saying it's a fundamental limit, because this is for a certain configuration, right? That's a good question. I don't know if you have like CVL lensing measurements. I wonder what the actual limit on neutrino mass is. That's easy to check, but this is for a certain experimental configuration. That's an interesting question. What the actual fundamental limit on neutrino mass is, which should be easy to calculate. Cool. Okay. Now I'm gonna, in the last 10 or 15 minutes, I'm gonna switch gears slightly. So the stuff I've been talking about so far has to do with measuring the growth of fluctuations, the amplitude of matter fluctuations, and comparing that with what you expect at low redshift. But there's a technique that's been written about a while ago, which is called cosmography, where you really want to measure just distances, okay? So many of you are familiar with measuring distances using supernovae, but this is a method of looking at, not an appropriate slide yet, but it's a method of looking at comparing distances by using lensing. And the way you the things you need to do that, so you have the CMB at a redshift of 1000, which is the source. And then you have this blue solid line, which is the CMB kernel. And what that means is this is the redshift range over which a CMB lensing measurement is sensitive to the matter fluctuations at. So this is one, peaks at around two. Because the source is at such a high redshift, you're sensitive to the fluctuations at a very wide range of redshifts. It's a broad kernel which peaks around two. Now you have galaxies, right? So LSST is another planned experiment, which is looking at just optical measurements. So it's going to map a very large area of the sky and go very deep and find a lot of galaxies, order billions of galaxies. And these galaxies are lensed, so you can measure the lensing signal. So let's say that the LSST source location is at lower redshift. You're not going to find galaxies above redshift of three or so. Not many. So you're peaking somewhere at a redshift less than one. And you can measure the lensing signal using those galaxies, and that kernel picks up fluctuations that are at lower redshift. So the important thing to note here is that there's overlap between these two kernels, which means you can do a lot of things by cross-correlating the signal that you get from CMB lensing with not just the locations of the sources from a very large survey like LSST, but also with the actual lensing signal, which is the shapes of galaxies at low redshift. So, I mean, there's been lots of work done with this already. Cross-correlations is a big field. But I want to focus on one kind of measurement, which is you're going to look at the same lenses, but they're so different sources are lensed by the same galaxy, by the same lenses. So let's say you have an experiment like ACT, which is the ground-based CMB experiment, which looks at the CMB, and you look at the same galaxy, and you look at how the CMB background is lensed by that galaxy. And then you switch to an optical experiment and you look at how galaxies behind that same galaxy that you originally looked at are lensed by that same galaxy, right? Why is that interesting? So maybe it's helpful to write up a little bit of math. If you think of the lensing signal as some shear, which means that you're just like shearing the map that you look at. So it could be the CMB or it could be the galaxy itself. And that lensing signal is proportional to the total projected mass density. So this is the actual matter content inside that galaxy or inside that halo. So this is a function of R or theta. This is a function of R, which is the galaxy profile itself. So you have some profile, R, and you have delta sigma. So this is just telling you that each galaxy is inside, you know, or each galaxy group is inside some halo with a lot of mass inside the center. It's like a halo, right? But it's also sensitive to a factor called sigma critical, which is a purely geometric quantity. And all that this sigma critical depends on are the redshifts of your sources and the redshifts of your lenses and differences. Okay, so this numerator only depends on the actual matter content of the thing that's doing the lensing, right? And the denominator depends purely on the geometry of this lens setup. So the idea here is, let's say you use two different sources and you measure the lensing signal from the same halos, and you take a ratio of these, then this factor, which depends only on the matter fluctuations at that halo, will cancel. And what you get, what you're left behind is a, well, this is gamma, this is R, is a ratio of purely geometric distance factors. So we're kind of going in the opposite direction here. We're no longer interested in the matter fluctuations. We're just interested in the geometry of the universe. and well, more specifically, the expansion of the universe, which is related to the geometry, and things like the Dark Energy Equation of State. So because this is really measuring, it's not sensitive to the actual content of the galaxies or the halos. It's just sensitive to distances, which is sensitive to the Dark Energy Equation of State and to curvature, for example. So this is this plot here is showing you our measurement, where we take the Planck CMB lensing map, and we cross-correlate that with the positions of galaxies selected from a spectroscopic survey like CMAS, from the Boss spectroscopic survey. And then we convert that cross-correlation into the equivalent shear signal that you would expect from galaxies. And you see those are the red points there. And then we do the same thing with galaxies from the CFHT lens galaxy survey. These are, you know, it's a very deep survey that goes and looks behind the CMAS galaxy groups and looks at their shapes, stacks their shapes, and measures the lensing signal around them. And then you can see that's a different signal. So it's the same halos, but it's a different signal. And that difference in the signal is purely coming from the fact that there's this difference in the distances to the galaxies. And then we take the ratio. And it's this ratio should be independent of, so it shouldn't depend on what the halo is doing, what's happening in that halo. It should be independent of distance, roughly. And you don't need to model what's going on to the halo, as I keep repeating. We do this in thin redshift slices because there's some redshift evolution in this ratio, and it's really important to take account of that. And that's why this method really only works if you have spectroscopic galaxies for which you know the redshifts very precisely. If you have photometric galaxies, then this method could be biased. The photometric galaxy. So this you don't really care too much about the. It's not so sensitive to the redshifts of the source galaxies. It's very sensitive to the redshifts of the lens galaxies.
What
does lambda CDM predict? Yes, that's the next slide. Okay, so this is the same thing plotted, but as a function of redshift. And the three measurements here are the distance ratios from each redshift slice that we have. And the curves here are predictions for different cosmologies. The black solid curve is lambda CDM with the best fit values from the Planck primary CMB experiment. And then there are some crazy models in here, like no dark energy or crazy curvature and things like that. Which we exclude, but this is like, you know, it's the first measurement of this ratio, so it's not very constraining. It's a 17% measurement at redshift of 0.54. There's no inconsistency here, but it's also not very constraining. So there is this mild dependence on the dark energy equation of state and on curvature, which are the two things that really matter when it comes to looking at distances across very large redshift ranges. So I want to stress again that I should have put a lot of citations here of measurements that have been done on cosmographic distance ratios, but using only galaxies. So you can, instead of putting the CMB here, you can use different galaxy sources. Which are a different redshift. So you can have Z star CMB here, Z1, Z2, and we are over here. So people have used different galaxies at different source redshifts to do this measurement. But again, going back to the kind of the theme of this talk is that you want to get as much leverage as you want. You want to really be comparing things where dark energy was not dominant, and over very large distances where curvature can matter. And that's why this technique is of combining it with the CMB is especially useful and especially constraining. In the future, this is a plot from Dawes-Burgel 2009, which I forgot to put in there. It's just a projection showing that if you, the outer contours are if you just have Planck measurements, Planck CMB measurements, but then you tighten that by adding a 1% distance ratio so that you can get a 10% measurement of W. And even though 10% doesn't really compare to the 1% measurements you get, you expect from things like BAO, supernovae, et cetera, this is a radically different method. You're not using like actual distances that you measure from the brightness of an object or from the position of a peak. You're looking at lensing signals, which is, you know, fluctuations that you see in maps because of, and then canceling that out. So it's a non-trivial complementary way of looking at this. So even if you can get a 10% measurement, it's an important complement to what you can do. And this is a projection for something like what you can get from a CMB stage 4 experiment with something like an LSST galaxy survey, which gives you photoses and DESI, which gives you spectroscopic measurements of galaxies. That's all I have. Just to summarize, if you use the CMB as one of the anchors in your measurements, then you have this leverage across extremely large redshift ranges, which is especially useful in constraining things that become important late in the universe, like dark energy and neutrino mass, but also things like curvature that are important over wide redshift ranges. Ongoing experiments like ACT and SPT and others are demonstrating new techniques like CMB halo lensing and distance ratios, which will add information. And eventually, things like an experiment like CMB stage 4 will be able to make a significant detection of neutrino mass and tightly constrain the dark energy equation state. Yes.
If you take the partial equation, and you look at the capital information, lens, CMB, if you get a parameter called A lens, A lens is one. It hasn't been one for a long time. This is a tension.
Right.
What's the status of that?
So the status of, so it depends on what you mean by a lens, but if I'm thinking of what you're meaning, like there's one way of thinking about it is look at the CMB power spectrum, and lensing causes peak smearing in this power spectrum, and you can measure maybe that's the one you're thinking of, like a lens, which this measurement of a lens is discrepant from in the Planck data with the measurement that you make from right within Planck itself within this, and that's the measurement that I showed.
Two sigma-ish
measurement, and that, you know, that you have to wait to add to Planck to make any.
We haven't
gotten in terms of constraining power beyond Planck. But again, to stress, you know, those things that I showed are just like 12% of the data that we have so far. There's a lot amount of data that we've yet to analyze and that we're collecting and plan to collect. So very soon we'll be like saying interesting things about these tensions.
Basically, it's worth emphasizing that a lens from Planck 2.5 is high, but a lens from the Planck 4.5 is not anomalous with a small error bar.
Yeah.
So that would seem to rule out any explanation of this as really being a 2.5.
Yeah.
There could certainly be some interesting.
It could be systematic in the Hayao Planck paper and the people have written papers about.
I talked to Professor Bouchard. We should look forward to is controversial. They're not happy about this. Depends on which way you look at it.
Right. And then that's just going back to one of my first slides, which is that the neutrino mass that you get from this Planck TT, which is the 2-point measurement of a lens, is pretty tight, and there's a question of whether you should believe it already, and it's very different from what you get from the 4-point lensing measurement. Yeah. Yes, Matt.
So I was curious about the constraints on the halo profile that you get by looking at lensing estimator. So I guess maybe you could just say a few more words about how you get information about the radio profile, because you were saying that it's well fit by MFW.
Yeah.
Just connect the dots.
Yeah. So. So in real space, you do this reconstruction of the lensing potential and you stack on the clusters. And that's the blob that I showed. You can just take a radial profile of this. Depending on the resolution of your experiment, you can say something about the actual profile. At our resolution, so even though in our paper we do show a profile, it most of the information comes from the first bin, which is just an overall amplitude of the mass scale. So I think it, well, at the sensitivity that we had, you only get an overall mass scale. But when you go down a lot further in noise with CMB stage 4, you can actually get independent measurements inside a large cluster to actually get some more information about the profile. Does that kind of, so yeah, so you're just like stacking in real space and taking the radial profile of these of the stack.
Have you compared the profiles you get from, let's say, the profiles you get from TFC?
No, not yet. So again, like we're only at the point where we can get an overall mass scale. But yeah, that's definitely something that would be interesting. You can do that already with weak lensing. I'm sure people have looked at galaxy lensing. You can compare the profile with SE, but not yet at the stage where you can do that. CMB lensing, yeah.
Is there any sense, how far back in redshift you can do this for clusters with CMB?
Right. So a couple of things, right? So because the CMB is at the highest redshift, in principle, it's lensed by any cluster at any redshift. So you're limited just by where you can find clusters, right? So it doesn't matter. In fact, your ability to find clusters in the CMB experiment is also actually independent of redshift. It slightly depends on your beam size. But this SC effect that I talked about, which gives you a hole in the map at the location of clusters, it's mostly redshift independent. So you can, it especially helps you find higher shift clusters that you wouldn't have found with other methods. And then the lensing itself, there's probably a small beam dependence how well you can do this angular, because the angular scale changes. My feeling is that it's actually easier at higher redshifts. There's more signal, but I need to check on that. But again, because it's at behind every cluster, there's not a strong effect on how well you can do it.
I'm sort of curious in this distance ratio test, which angular scale is going to be.
It's the effect itself is angular. It's not dependent on the angle, right? So as long as you have, it's equal weight. Shouldn't it be equal weight? As long as you can reconstruct the profile in an unbiased way at any given angular scale, it shouldn't matter in terms of the actual ratio, because the ratio itself is independent of the angle.
I see. So could I think of it as like I just estimate the mass of the cluster using the CMB at the first galaxy?
Yeah.
And then if I get inconsistent masses, my distance ratio is wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's very close to the cluster or it's very far, as long as you have sensitivity close or far and you're unbiased. And the because there's more signal. Because there's more signal, you're saying.
Yeah, like when you shift your plot of the
dipoles. Yeah. So that's true. So because there's more signal at small scales, you can get but there's also the error bars get smaller at large scales for weak lensing, I think, right? Also. So it's not really clear where most of this is coming from.
Right. Huh. The